welcome to Rather Good Chat, and today we have a very special episode in honour of the release of our show on Netflix, Bad Dinosaurs. We've got our co-creator, Alex Mallinson. Oh my
Hello.
God! Wow. It's Alex Mallinson!
Woo!
Rapturous.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're so glad to have you with us, Alex. We three created the show Bad Dinosaurs, which was previously called Dinosaurs, Terrible Lizards, and existed as some YouTube shorts. Good 10 years ago at the time of recording.
Goodness.
And it has been It's been on a long, long, long journey from stupid sketches of terrible dinosaurs on the back of a napkin to absolutely glorious, globally released Netflix show, which is available now, as of today, at the time of recording, on your Netflix show TV thing or device, like phone, tablet, or other connected thing. Hooray!
Devour it. Consume it immediately.
Consume.
Watch it over and over and over again, and give it a big thumbs up and review it as the best thing you've ever seen. Or
And subscribe.
I think that might be the wrong medium, Dave. But you can like and subscribe the podcast? You can probably do that. Like and subscribe.
Please do that, please.
Please. Oh God, please.
At this stage, I kind of want to do that to people in real life. Could you just like me now? And subscribe to me.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend the other day, and you, Joel, I can't remember. The idea that...
Have you got any other friends?
The best way to deal with someone who's boring you or you don't like is just to say, unsubscribe.
Yeah, I think that was me. Yeah. I was telling you about something and you just said, unsubscribe. Well, that's how it should have gone. I suspect it did.
Yes, yeah.
That's how it would go next time.
A friend and flatmate who wanted to stop my inane babbling. Just said, can I just stop you there? And that was, it worked.
Great.
That's very good. Yeah.
What happens if you do subscribe in real life? Does that mean you like constantly phoning them up going, just putting some toast in the toaster? You never do that, though. You put bread in the toaster. Why would you put toast in the toaster?
Oh my goodness.
I don't know. Double toaster does sound like something pubs would do.
Yeah. I mean, I have a disagreement. There's an ongoing war at Veach Base Alpha over how cooked toast should be. And so, you know, the dial, I have to check the dial every time. If I forget to check the dial and the toast pops when it's just essentially warmed up bread, then I do have to put that pseudo toast back in the toaster to properly toast it. So there is a situation, I suppose, where I would toast toast. So I could call you if I tell you that.
I toast toast quite a lot.
Right, do you?
Our toast is a little bit small. So sometimes a bit of like an inch of bread pokes out the top.
Oh, I thought you were going to say inch of bread is all you can get in.
that'd be a very small toaster. So I often stick it on for slightly less than I want.
Yeah.
So that when it pops, I can turn it round and do it again.
I mean, Alex lives in Denmark now, don't you, Alex? Which I'm sure we'll get onto in a bit, which is the land of the Vikings. So presumably you have Viking long bread there and have to flip it in the toaster all the time, right?
No, you just post it out into the fjord in flames. It's really annoying. You see a lovely loaf and that's just what you've got to do. Pop it out there.
Burn it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it there's like a kind of reciprocal thing? You set your bread on fire, send it off on a burning longboat, and then someone at the other end of the fjord.
Some will wash up next to you. It's constantly going backwards and forwards.
That does sound the sort of mutualistic Danish way, actually, which is, that's ideal. I'll pop down to the field in a sec and just pick up some soggy toast. Bread.
I'm very jealous that you can just pop down to the fjord.
That's amazing, isn't it? What a thing to ask. You told me about 5 minutes ago before we started recording that the fjord was full of pig milk. Is that...
It was a very slight exaggeration.
Okay, it's just got some pig milk in it.
I hope it's got no pig milk in
it. Oh, really?
And And so by exaggeration, I mean
lie.
Outright lie. Yeah. It is. But Denmark is a big pig producer. It produces big pigs.
Right. Danish bacon is famous, right?
It is.
Yeah. Weirdly. Yeah.
It is in this country. I don't know if it is in other countries.
I think they send most of it to the UK because we look in the shelves here and actually bacon is not, you know, extremely popular.
There was a year where I was at a school down the road from a massive Danish bacon warehouse with Danish bacon written on the side. And very, very close to it lived my friend Kenneth Bacon. And his mum, Mrs. Bacon, worked in the bacon warehouse.
Amazing.
Sorting out bacon. Yeah, there you go.
And she called him Kevin and not Dan.
Kenneth Bacon.
Kenneth. Oh, Kenneth.
Yeah.
But not Dan.
Dan Bacon.
Danish Bacon.
Oh, yeah. No. You wouldn't want to be Dan because that's not Danish. That is actually Dan. You'd want to call him like Dad
right.
Or Dam or Dal.
Dan adjacent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Danish Bacon. Yeah. Or just, I suppose there's Childish Gambino, isn't it? You can put Ish on, or Trish, you know.
Trish,
Nish,
Nish Kumar. Danish. Is it? Yeah. Nish. Yeah.
Dan, oh, maybe his middle name's Nish. Danish Bacon.
Oh, yes, Danish that's
Bacon.
It. Yeah,
there
that's
you
the
go.
One. We got there.
Danish Bacon. Brilliant. Well, there you go. I'm glad we've solved that. But everyone called him Kenneth. God knows why. Must have just been an affectation. I did know a kid who was called Mark, who everyone called Harry.
Harry, why Harry? But why did they call him Harry?
Well, because he was very big and very tough, and there was a boxer at the time who used to go, why Harry? All the time, so we called him Harry for that reason. Yeah.
That's the best Frank Bruno impersonation I've ever heard.
It is almost exactly like being here with him, isn't it? And my surprise for you today is that here in the studio... no, he's not here. So we should probably talk about Bad Dinosaurs, right? And our intention is to talk about kind of, you know, the early days, isn't it, really? Because everybody knows it's a wonderful and fantastic TV show for kids, available on Netflix right now.
Well, presumably by the time you listen to this, it would have taken the world over entirely.
This is going to go out like within minutes of the show being released, right? So
yeah.
How long are you expecting it? Is this like when the AI super intelligent?
Exactly that. Yes. Yeah. Like the first few seconds will be quite slow.
Yeah.
Then exponential growth by the first minute. Yeah. I think basically all culture in the world will be just bad dinos.
Right. Okay.
All other forms of culture will be converted into dino substrate.
Yeah, that sounds
good. Further the aims of the dinos.
I mean, if that doesn't happen, obviously once we've seized power, then all other forms of culture will be banned and punishable with terrible things, right?
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, hopefully we won't have to impose that law because it should impose itself.
Well, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it makes all other culture look pretty, pretty mundane, really, doesn't it?
I'm already bored of all culture.
Pretty drab.
Yeah.
I'm gonna chuck some hot take requests at you for culture. And Alex.
Yes.
Shakespeare.
Not dinosaur-y enough?
Yeah, great. Dave. Marlowe.
Absolutely not. No, not a single dinosaur. Rubbish.
Yeah. Alex, the Brontes.
Now, I think there was an early version that did have... I'm trying to build up to the obvious Brontosaurus joke. Let's just go straight into the Brontosaurus. There we go. Let's just get to it. No one's got time.
Yeah, they were Brontosaurus.
So acceptable in our bold...
Because they were dinosaurs.
...dinosaurian future, because
okay.
They were sauropods.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, last one. Dave, the Godfather trilogy.
Oh, I love them. Yes, they're brilliant. They're amazing.
Hang on.
Which?
The ones without dinosaurs.
Oh, I was thinking of the one where they have the big theme park and there's dinosaurs and all the dinosaurs escape.
No, that's not it. No.
That's not Godfather.
No.
Oh.
No.
No, then no.
Rubbish. Boo.
Rubbish.
Boo.
Famously terrible movies. Actually, I quite like the third one, but the other two can get in the bin.
How many dinosaurs are in the third one?
Loads, yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Great.
Yeah, that's the one where the dinosaur comes to, like, San Francisco and roams around in the streets for a bit, isn't it?
No, are you thinking of pig?
Still
pig.
Jurassic Park, isn't it? It's still Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Are pigs dinosaurs?
Yes.
Great. Well, then pigs okay.
Okay. There's a scene in The Godfather where one of them wakes up and someone's put a velociraptor's head in his bed. That's true.
Yeah. The film producer. I think he's actually the film producer of Jurassic Park. As I recall, that was based on a real life incident where Frank Sinatra was desperate to get a role as the dinosaur scientist, the dinosaurologist in Jurassic Park. And Spielberg was saying, I'm not going to do Spielberg's voice. I know I can do a perfect impression of Spielberg. Then, no, he's never going to get it. He's never going to get that part. I'm never going to give it that part. It's not for him. I'm not going to give it to him. No. And so they chopped his pet velociraptor's head off, left it in the bed.
Did Frank Bruno just come back?
No, I've sent him off. You said you didn't want him.
Oh, right, okay. Right, no. Just, I thought I heard him a second ago. Yeah.
Actually, you didn't say you didn't want him. I just detected an antipathy in your voices. But he's very sensitive, Frank. That's why he got into boxing, because he's so sensitive. He takes offense at everything, like literally everything. Yeah. Anyway, and so that's how old Blue Eyes ended up as the dinosaurologist in the Jurassic Park movies.
Wow.
Some of his finest work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And singing that song.
I loved how when he sung the theme tune, the Jurassic Park theme tune that we all know and love
Park,
so well.
We're off to Jurassic Park. It's got some dinosaurs, and if you're lucky, they won't eat you up. That's how it went, isn't it? Or is that Howard's Way?
That sounds like Howard's Way to me.
I like that they're rebooting that. I think the Howard's World franchise is going to be a lot better than Howard's Way initially.
Yeah.
Howard's Way was a, if you're not from the UK and over 40, Howard's Way was a TV show from a long time ago.
It was the one where they had a cheese empire, right? And Howard split off to try and make his fortune in the whey business, right?
Oh, no.
Whey protein, I think that's where that came from.
That's absolutely true, yes. Yeah.
And he had to weigh it, obviously, to get it into the correct size tubs. Yeah. Do you know the way to weigh my way? Yes, I do know the way to weigh your way. Please weigh your way.
that only lasted one season, obviously.
It lasted the length of that song, because, you know, that was that was the intro to episode one, and everybody just turned it off in disgust because there were no dinosaurs.
Well, famously,
dinosaurs don't eat whey! Where are the dinosaurs? Damn it! Sorry, carry on.
Well, famously, the moment they finished the theme song, the set caught fire and the studio exploded.
And a Tyrannosaurus came and ate them all, smashed through the wall. Yeah. Which wasn't in the script. If it had been in the script, the series would have got...
Oh, yeah. Would have won awards, yeah.
Would have won the Being Eaten by a Tyrannosaurus award specifically, which is an Emmy, right? That's one of the Emmys.
Yes.
So this whole odyssey... As you know, we should go back further in time, shouldn't we? So this whole odyssey
to the Odyssey.
Yes.
So, the original.
These guys called the Trojans. And they were quite fierce.
Yes. So way back at the kind of dawn of the new millennium, Alex, you were doing incredible work on the internet. Specifically, the thing that I remember you doing, which made me think, oh my God, this guy is amazing. Was a dancing car in 3D.
Yes, it was the 2CV answer to the can we say brands? Do we
allow
that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Do you want to just tell original, us about that thing?
Because back then, obviously, there were only 12 of us on the internet, so it was a lot easier to come to one's attention. There was you, me, Frank Bruno.
So there were some pancakes that people had given terminals to. Yeah.
But it was one of those chats in the pub that was like, oh, wouldn't it be funny? We'd all seen the Citroën C4 advert, which transformer.
Just for clarity, this isn't the pub with the three of us, because there will be chats like that in this conversation. This is before we got together, right? This is This is the this genesis is well of the whole
before
thing.
I even suspected yeah, yeah. that Alex existed.
Yeah, yeah. So this yes. is the other humans.
Slightest, yeah.
This is back I when
barely,
Alex knew
I
other humans.
I barely suspected yeah. I existed myself yeah. at that point. I was, yeah. I gained awareness in 21-20 to immediately launched a missile attack. No.
Do you know, when you said I gained awareness in, I immediately thought you're going, you're doing Skynet, aren't you? You are.
Thank you. I just got the date wrong. That was... But they keep pushing it back anyway, don't they? So the actual apocalypse.
They do, yes. Yeah.
But yeah, it was one of those, it was finally, look, I never got around to finishing a project. I still don't a lot of the time, which is why Dinosaurs is wonderful, because it was one of those ones we actually followed through. And this was another one where a dumb conversation about how it, that Citroen C4 advert was so cool. Wouldn't it be fun if it was a clapped out old 2CV? And then sort of the next 2 weeks, I fueled myself entirely with cheese sandwiches and made the animation, built the animation over the top, filmed my brother dancing and sort of did the...
You know, oh, is that how you did it? I don't think I've ever asked you yeah. how you did it. Right, okay.
Yeah, it was him and some friends. I copied some of their moves, played it in the sort of viewport and sort of mimicked. And it looks terrible now.
I remember it as being mind-blowingly good.
I thought it looked great, yeah.
I couldn't quite believe that an individual had done it. You know, it looked, as with so much of your work, it looked like an enormously expensive studio production rather than like one guy mucking about.
We were so lucky in that there was that moment where there wasn't a lot of content online, so things could grab people's attention. The tools had become available for individuals to use. This is like only 10 years or something after Jurassic Park, which is kind of bizarre when you think about it, that there weren't... Mm.
Dinosaurs
there was no
everywhere.
Sort of tradition of digital animations. Yeah, yeah. It was. But
for context,
yeah,
put
it out.
Yeah,
and...
I want to kind of put this in context because I was at the time making lots of animation, but it was flash animation, which was the most incredibly visually basic stuff you can imagine. I mean, some of the people listening might remember it, be familiar with it, but it was cut out pictures of cats and horrible animals with strange mouths flapping around. And then, like, this beautiful CGI 3D animated dancing 2CV transformer robot.
Mm.
Like, wow! I just could not get my head around how someone could make something so fantastic. You know, it was amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. It was fun. It also cost a friend a lot of money because there was no YouTube to host this stuff on.
Yeah,
so
you
he
had
said,
to pay for
oh,
your
I'll host
with.
It for you.
Yeah,
and it got a million views and he owed his... internet supplier an awful lot, or the hosting company suddenly a large sum of money, which he ate very kindly as just,
oh, wow.
just to be part
really?
Of the nonsense. Yeah, yeah. It was
in those days there was a huge barrier to success, wasn't it? Like I had the same problem. I realized that BT Open World, which was a supplier of broadband, gave you unrestricted web space as part of their deal, and it was genuinely unmonitored because there was like loads of these deals, but they all actually really did have limits if you tried to push them. But so I hosted in the early days almost all of my flash animation content on my mum's free BT Open World server because there's no way I could possibly have afforded to pay for that bandwidth. And I guess they just didn't notice because they had millions of customers. Yeah, it was years and years before it
but wait, that's
became possible to host your own content. And then you didn't have to because YouTube came along and
Yeah.
What sort of views were you getting? Is that the Spong Monkeys era?
Yeah, they were getting Yeah, they were getting like big traffic back in the early 2000s. Yeah, yeah like a few million a week I was getting in those days.
Tasty.
Wow. Yeah.
Tasty.
Yeah.
We didn't monetize anything. We just didn't.
Yeah,
did
yeah, yeah, yeah.
We just it now
before,
it's like
before ads. Yeah.
Yeah,
before the internet went all commercial.
Yeah, I did sell some T-shirts off Cafe Press, and and there are some soft toys out there from later years as well. Because someone asked me if we could make some soft toys, and so those are still out there. Yeah, Spong Monkey plushies.
Mm.
Wow,
amazing thing.
Hopefully, fingers crossed for some dinosaur merch. That would be
yeah. Hopefully, the shops will be filled with
that.
It.
Hey, oh yeah,
so guys.
Yeah.
Guys, a long time ago, I wrote a song about the pair of you, and
right.
I thought I might sing it for you now.
You know how much I enjoy your songs, Joel, so I'm going to...
I like our two different, very different reactions to that. I'm flattered and excited, Dave.
Yeah.
Joel sings songs at me all the time. All of the time.
Okay, I see.
I can't pick up my phone without finding a song from Joel on it.
Well, stop using them as your ringtone.
Well, I mean, I do kind of creep into his house at night and sing them into his ear as he sleeps so they'll get into his dreams.
Yeah.
And they're largely about your suffering, aren't they, Dave?
They are, yeah, they're largely about
as much of it as possible.
The songs, when you creep into my bedroom at night, the songs are largely about how I should stop struggling, and it'll all go much easier if I just let it happen.
succumb. Okay, here we go. You ready?
Yes.
Here it comes. Are you braced? Are you sitting down? This is going to be quite an intense experience.
I've strapped myself in.
Dear listener at home, make sure that you're in a well-cushioned area, just in case any involuntary flailing happens. Okay, here we go.
There's a human man and his name is Dave, and if you think that he's not human, then you're much mistaken. He's got human organs and human glands, and he's a definitely genuinely human man. There's a human man called Alex Mallinson, and if you think that he's not human, then you are wrong. He's got a human brain and a human tooth, and when I tell you that he's human, I am telling the truth.
I mean, it was entirely accurate. So I can't fault it on those grounds.
You do have a human tooth. That's true. I've seen
I do.
It.
Just the one.
Just
but
the
it
one.
It goes all the way around.
One.
I mean, it goes all the way around, like it rotates around the mouth. It's like a
single central rotating tooth drill.
Has anyone else got a song they would like to sing?
No.
No.
Should we continue?
Yeah, let's continue. Sorry, I've derailed. I know it's very difficult to follow my beautiful songs because they're so affecting and emotional.
Yeah, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. So you made that and I saw that and thought it was amazing. And you kind of ended up in our creative gang, didn't you? Like the beta community was going at those at that point. And you were contacted by a mutual friend to do some work on Armando Iannucci's show, weren't you? Do you want to tell us about that?
Or are we talking Time Trumpet?
I think we are. Was that next or is there something in between? Because that's the next thing in my head.
There was lots of sort of thrashing around in between. It's interesting because these stories of people's careers, we do tend to gloss over the thrashing. Mm. And there was a lot of, I don't know what I'm doing. I start jobs and don't finish them, and so you know your hard drive ends up just full of nonsense.
Yep, know that feeling.
Have you got? Yeah, that's and then you get Dropbox, and they give you lots of more space, and you fill that up with nonsense. And you know, you pay an awful lot of money for the privilege of having an external company host just basically torrents of your failures is what it boils down to. And then every now and then goes, oh, it's going to cost you $120. To continue hosting your awful disasters. And so you pay it. So, no, there was a lot of that. Time Trumpet was one of the rare, this went well. It was obviously a BBC job, so it paid a tiny amount of money, but it did involve a weirdly prophetic piece of special effects where myself and a friend destroyed the Danish capital, Copenhagen,
with
Tesco tripods.
Yeah.
So I've since shown that to Danes and they're like, yeah, it's Copenhagen. Don't care, mate. Destroy it. Honestly, go to town on it, please.
Is that prophetic? Do you mean prophetic because you moved to Denmark or prophetic because Copenhagen's been destroyed?
By Tesco tripods.
Yes.
Yeah. In every count, I am a prophet.
Right.
But ironically, I'm still operating at a loss. So that's... So sorry. Oh no. Cut that out.
No, very good. Very good. We like bad puns. We love a bad pun.
Good. I've only got bad ones.
Yeah.
So
and what happened after that? Because the Time Trumpet was amazing work. I thought that was fantastic.
It was a lot of fun as well. And I think Gareth Edwards was involved with that back when he was a jobbing freelance CG artist before his astronomical film career.
Right.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure he was involved in some of those meetings.
Okay.
So, yeah, after that...
a meeting is totally when you honest. Walk into a room and everybody slaps you with beeves, right?
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the pitch meeting, is much more painful.
Cover you in pitch.
Where they cover you in... Yeah.
Yeah, tar.
That's the one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then slap you with beef.
Then they slap the meat on you and it sticks.
Yeah.
So in a normal
it does, it
meeting,
sticks to the pitch.
You walk out and you're covered in gore, but not the meat itself, but... The pitch meetings, the pitch has stuck the meat to you, so you come out like that. What's that superhero who's made of rock?
Rock Man.
Rock Jeff.
Rocky Jeff. You come out like Rocky Jeff.
The thing, I think you mean.
The thing. Yeah.
The meat. The meat thing.
The meat thing.
That'd be a, the meat thing. I love the meat thing.
What a great name for a superhero.
John Carpenter's The Meat Thing.
I ordered a...
I
ordered a curry over the weekend, and there was a particular dish that we wanted, and the options were chicken, beef, or meat.
Oh, non-beef meat.
I was overruled. I wanted to go for meat, just out of sheer wonder as to what it might be. But now we went for the beeves instead, sadly.
I wanted to know
what the meat was. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you'll never know what it is, and you know how it tastes, but... Its origin is forbidden, right?
Absolutely, yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You must never know the origin of the mystery meat.
If you ever do know, then bad things will happen.
Well, you'll end up on the meat, right?
Yes.
It'll be you next time.
You'll be the next meat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's almost certainly what the meat is. It's just the last person who found out what the meat is.
Yes.
Oh, no!
Yes.
No! They're coming for me.
Yeah, the options are basically beef, or people who ask too many questions.
Yeah. I mean, this is a straight Blumhouse pitch, isn't it?
It really is.
There you go. Yeah. There's your 14 million, boom.
Yeah.
Make John Carpenter's The Curry.
So what happened next then, Alex? What happened after that?
Well, an exciting thing happened in that I had a massive loss of confidence.
Right.
And I'm going to be honest about that. I just had a kind of absolute crash where I couldn't work.
Yeah.
And there's sort of mental block. And I think
it's important to talk about this stuff, right? Because people pretend it doesn't happen, and it absolutely does. And then the fact that people pretend it doesn't happen means that when it does happen, you feel like you're weird and uniquely bad. And it's not true at all. It's actually really common.
It is. But we were really bad at talking about that stuff, I think, and being open about it back then. And I think we do live in a slightly kinder world now where those conversations can happen. But at the time, it just couldn't, because I was a freelancer. And so that kind of whatever it was, that sort of breakdown was just kind of career smashing. So I sort of rebuilt after that and was quite kind of slow and in terms of building back my confidence. And I think getting together with you a few years later after that was part of that rediscovering the joy of just making dumb stuff, because it had lost its kind of appeal to a certain degree by then, because I associated it with this incredible stress.
Yeah.
So I'd been doing jobbing freelance work, and then this was a chance to do something genuinely joyous and fun, like we were doing back in the early noughties.
As I recall talking to you at the time, you'd been doing quite a lot of sensible design, hadn't you?
Which is
a perfectly valid thing to do, but it always struck me it wasn't what I thought was your kind of core, the joyous that you can bring to the world. But also,
and I think it's collaborative as well. I think it's really hard to do that sort of dumb, fun stuff on your own. Some people can do it and they're amazing and they just have a really unique voice.
I struggle
with
one.
Yeah, I think it takes a little gang in a pub to sort of egg each other on.
Yeah, yeah. It's lovely to hear that working with us was a positive experience, because I lost count long ago of how many people's will to live we've crushed with our awfulness.
Well, I mean, number one is mine, and then everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you long ago gave up any will to continue breathing, didn't you, Dave?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Marking time now until the welcome release of the grave.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the time where you finally let me die.
Not yet, babe. Slap.
Are you kept respiring by some sort of obscene device?
Yes, absolutely. It's hooked into all my various bits. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the end of all the tubes, there's me blowing into it.
Yeah, you've got a foot pump on one leg and you're blowing into a tube. Yeah.
Yeah.
Winding a little brass wheel to keep my blood going. All that kind of stuff.
A little squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
And then Dave's like, let me die. Like, please. No. Not yet, David, not yet.
Yeah, that's my life. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And what a beautiful thing that is.
Hmm. So I wasn't there when you and Joel met. I was doing another job. I was off on doing a different job, which was an awful job. I won't talk about. It was terrible.
I was about to ask, and now I won't.
It was a thing. No, we don't. I cut very little. I'm a very lazy editor. I was off a job that Joel and I had. We'd written and I was animating that turned into like a horrid thing that I didn't really enjoy. Mm. I didn't like what we made. But while that went on, Joel and you got together and started like doing dino stuff. And I was at the time intensely jealous because I wanted nothing more than not to be animating this awful thing I didn't like and to be playing with you guys on dinosaurs. I was so jealous.
That's funny because I was deeply intimidated by you because you were sort of the silent partner in it. Joel very much emphasized your kind of you and him having sort of started this thing. So I thought, but Dave's not coming to this one. Dave must hate me.
Oh no,
he must despise me.
He's doing a horrible job.
Yeah.
And then when we finally chatted and sort of later on, and it was like, oh, this is fine. Oh God, it's fine. I've been worrying over nothing.
I didn't realise you felt like that, Alex. So you could have mentioned it to me. I would have punctured that scene.
I mean, I'm a hugely intimidating man, it has to be said.
Enormous. It's the rippling muscles.
It's the huge intimidating physical presence does it a lot as well.
Yes. Yeah. And the way you glide in on a levitating chariot is, I think, a little ostentatious. We have mentioned this before, but it's a bit much.
I'm very much Baron Harkonnen. If you picture that, that's kind of what I'm like. Yes. Yeah.
True. And just for context, because the people listening won't ever have actually seen us, most likely. Like, Dave is quite slender and slight. And Alex, who is talking about being intimidated by him, is like a Greek statue of the ideal
Alex,
human.
That's not true.
Alex is 25 times fitter than both of us put together.
I did go a bit. I went a bit.
Just
Jimmy.
Looks like some kind of perfect human.
That did happen. I don't. Yeah. Well, I was making up for the fact. Yeah. First 25 years of my life sat on my backside doing computer stuff. So it seemed like a nice kind of thing to do in my mid 30s to go and do that. But yeah. But like, because we've joked about, we've talked, and I'm going to jump up the shape language thing of kind of you learn a lot about an animation and kind of.
Mm.
We talk about how you convey a character. I am amused by the fact that we are kind of basically the full cubist palette between the three of us. That we could be combined in fun. Yeah.
I'm essentially a sphere.
Sphere, line, and triangle. That's our shapes, right?
Yeah. Just place us against a sunset. You'll know who's who. It's
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got recognisable silhouettes. That's what people keep. I mean, I feel like I'm a bit of a foreigner stroke imposter to the kind of design language conversations that happen. I try not to impose too much on them and try and listen as much as I can. But that kind of shape language and recognisable silhouette thing, people put huge emphasis on it. And that's the thing, isn't it? Like we were saying, kind of standing on the horizon. But that is a thing that we think about, right? What does the silhouette of a character look like? Are they immediately recognisable? And do you understand from that silhouette who they are? And, you know, does it give you cues as to their
well, that,
you know,
this goes right back to the very, very origins of dinos, right? Was Joel and me, we were doing some ad job, I forget what it was, and on our lunch break. We were just making each other laugh. We came up with the pun that, like, dinosaurs, terrible lizards, right?
Well, because dinosaurs literally translates from the Latin as terrible lizards. That's why they're called dinosaurs. But I'm sure we are very far from the first people to make this observation, right? It must have been made independently many thousands of times. But yeah, the idea that the meaning of terrible has kind of shifted a bit since Victorian times when that name was given to them.
Well, I think there's something, there was something fresh in of treating them as clowns. Because there was always, everything was about reverence for dinosaurs. And I think Jurassic Park played a big role of that. It's the scale and the majesty.
I think there were two really that we were fighting, because the other end of the spectrum is the Disney, they're just kids, but they're dinosaur shape. You know what I mean? Like, they talk and you know what I mean? And we wanted to be something that wasn't a Disney speaking dinosaur. And wasn't
so, I mean, the way it started, the very, very start of it was John and I had like made this hilarious, unique observation that dinosaurs made terrible lizards, and terrible can mean bad.
that's it, folks. That's where this whole thing came from.
That's it. Our lunch break, we were on some ad job, and on our lunch break, we were having lunch together in a cafe. Was it? We were at Shoreditch House. Just like, spent a half hour just doodling really stupid dinosaurs for each other, just drawing a stupid drawing of a stupid dinosaur, trying to make them
as bad
drawings as possible as well. Like they weren't in any way good character designs. We just like, so I drew a Stegosaurus that was basically a semicircle with four evenly spaced square legs at the bottom, right, and a face on the side, you know, that kind of thing, right? Just idiot dinosaurs.
Yeah, and the Diplodocus, whose neck was just so long, it was just like a string that was curled round and round. And, and an Allosaurus, whose head was just like so massive, it was upside down on the floor and his body was dangling off the head. All that stuff, right?
All of every single... It's interesting because if you did animate them as a drawing, if it was 2D animated, then that sort of thing translates so perfectly. And I think because I was in a kind of CG world at the time and going, well, I'll do them as 3D CG rigged characters, you've immediately ruined every single pipeline of kind of creating functioning characters. Because everything is designed for sort of quadrupeds, bipeds, this is how joints work, and you ruined that with every single drawing. You defied every physical law to create these hilarious things, and that's a delight. I mean, I was desperate to do the dinosaur with its legs, four legs all in a row, and work out how to animate that in 3D. Yeah.
It's what you're saying about shape language, right? When I was doing those drawings, those stupid little sketches, the point that I was doing was entirely, what's the least amount of detail and features you could have to still be recognizably a Triceratops, right?
Yes.
Like what bits can you cut out? And my Triceratops was basically just a blob with three horns sticking out randomly from a face.
And you say horns, they were triangles, right? It's a circle.
Triangles,
like
a
spheroid with three triangles sticking out of it. Yeah,
yeah, and it's like, and that looks like a Triceratops, like a very, very bad one. So I was so impressed when Alex managed to like make those into actual functioning 3D models. That's incredible.
Well, I mean, I think, to jump back slightly, because I remember we'd had this conversation. We got these things. I was thinking, I really like these little dinosaurs. I love them. I'd really love to make a thing with them, but I don't feel like I can do this justice. You know, it wasn't something I wanted to try and make myself. I was like, I know. Let's call Alex and see how he's doing. And I knew that you were on a hiatus. And I also knew you were much too talented to want to do this stupid little thing with us, and we're probably very busy anyway. But I gave you a shout anyway, just on the off chance. And we sat, do you remember, we sat in the sun on the grass in Hoxton Square.
Yes.
And mucked about with little drawings, and it became obvious to me that actually you were really into it and we were going to be able to make it. And just the joy of that conversation on Hoxton Square, it just brought me so much joy, because I knew that it was going to be wonderful. That was when I realized we were going to go from a stupid conversation to actually being able to make something that I was going to really love, you know. That was.
And I think it's a really good testament to when you kind of know when you've got a good idea. It's even if you sort of second guess yourself from various projects, maybe you're not second guessing, you're just having the correct instinct and response to something that isn't right, the crewing isn't right, whatever the sort of the relationships, the idea. But that totally was.
There's something about collaborate. Yeah. There's something about collaboration and partners as well, isn't there? In that, you know, in our line of work, in our lives, we quite often are in situations where you've got something you're really positive about and you try and translate the joy to someone and they go, I don't know about this. It happens all the time. And the joy when you kind of sit down with someone and they don't do that, they go, oh yeah, and we could do this and we could do that. And, it's a bit like people talking about the rules of improv, but those rules are also like the way in which you can forge a really great collaborative, creative relationship with someone, right? So I just going, that's great. And we can do this. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a real lesson there in that it was also, I think we could disagree on things, but we were never sort of at odds with the fundamental concept.
No, you've got to be able to disagree well, right? Because there's always going to be disagreements. Yeah. And I think that comes down to respect. Like, we respect your opinion and your skills and your natural talent enormously. So when we disagree, you know, I'm personally always very much aware that I could be wrong, or that if it's not a question of someone being wrong and someone being right, that it's not always worth fighting because I might prefer your outcome to mine anyway, right? That's
and
just
choosing
about respect.
Battles is always part of this process. It does remind me of a time. What I didn't get from the dinosaurs, and I did get ages ago, back again, really early special effects stuff. I made a video with my brother, and I don't know if we want to post a link, whatever. It was a jolly little let's make an action scene, and we didn't have prop guns, we didn't have anything like that, so we just pretended like kids to be firing guns, and then I added muzzle flashers.
I
thought you were going to say we didn't have prop guns, so we had to use real live ones.
Yeah, we were riddled with bullet holes by the end of that shoot.
But the police never came. For whatever reason, it got the attention of some producers who were like, maybe we can do another one, but this time they've got sticks and they can be dressed as soldiers. And it was the sort of this kind of sense of, it's an innocent, boyish thing of how you play.
Yeah, you've lost the fundamental heart of it there, yeah.
Yeah, and understanding what it is and who it's for has been a big lesson of this sort of whole process, and never losing sight of what is it, who it's for.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think initially Dinos was definitely for us. We made each other laugh so much.
Yeah.
You've got to like keep an eye on who the target is, right? There's no use spending thousands of hours making something which is only ever going to amuse you and your mates.
Well, I think
at the early stage, it's got to be something that amuses you, right? It's got to be something that makes you laugh.
I think there's a really...
There's no way you're ever going to get the enthusiasm and the traction to make it.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I think there's a really important point here, and it's one of the many differences between commissioned work and stuff that you just do yourself. And because people quite often sit there, especially when they're starting out, thinking, you know, what can I make that will be successful? And they're second guessing what people like and what the algorithm on, you know, and that is how you become mediocre. Because the thing that you need to do is you need to make the thing that you love, right? And then you can make sure that it gets optimized or whatever when that becomes a priority. But the most important thing is to make the thing that you want to make and trust that it will find an audience. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But, you know, at least it will always be something that you enjoyed making, because otherwise you won't keep making them, right? Or they'll just be the same as all the other people who are trying to make whatever the algorithm likes.
Maybe you can game it like that. Maybe you cynically you can design a thing to be successful. But I remember back in the rather good days where we did loads of animations, where we churned out animations for the web in Flash and later in After Effects.
Yeah.
There was never any correlation between how much time and effort we put into it and how successful it was.
No, no. Or, if anything, like, it's inverse a lot of the time.
How good I thought it was and how successful it was. No. Never a correlation at all. Yeah.
No, because the people in the world don't see a lot of the stuff that we in production obsess about, right? Mm. Like, they don't care about the little flourishes of production polish. What they care about is whether the thing is engaging and funny or it makes them feel something. And that is built in at a deeper level than, and you can't see it always yourself, right? Like, so that some of the most successful things that we've done have been the quickest, you know, and we've put a lot of time into things that never really made any noise, you know?
Yeah.
It's about the idea, not about,
yeah, I mean, we spent like months on a project and then it's just sunk without a trace.
Yeah.
Or I've spent 3 days bashing out a stupid flash animation and it's done gangbusters, right?
Yeah, back yeah. Like, the, yeah. I think probably the most popular thing I ever made was We Light the Moon, which I did in no time. Like, that was knocked out in hours to an improvised song that was recorded.
That
live
was you and your
camcorder.
Brother drunk with a guitar, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then the animation was just knocked out in Flash with some characters that I'd made the other day. Yeah. Some of those things I really loved, but, like, I mean, there's an awful one that we probably can't say the name of here, which is just the most incredibly awful, rude thing anyone's ever made in claymation.
Yeah, that's probably the best one, isn't it? I mean, that one I did spend, how long did I film that? Was it a week? I can't remember. Was it 2 weeks?
It's so awful, isn't it?
It's
wonderful, but just insanely awful. But it was a great piece of work. It was a very kind of, it was distilled, wasn't it? It was distilled essence of awfulness.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, what we should be talking about is the dinosaurs, isn't it? Because, I mean, one of the things that I think is relevant from what we were just saying there to the show that you can watch now when you turn on Netflix after you've finished listening to this.
Immediately.
Yes, immediately, and watch the whole 3 and a bit hours of it, is that the show we've made for broadcast is... Oh, well, actually, we never talked about the shorts. We need to backtrack here a bit, I'll finish this thought first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that the...
But when you say the show we've made, you mean the show we and loads of far more talented people than us have made.
Yeah, yeah, of course. The show that has ended up on for broadcast... that we co-created, but was made by an enormous leviathan of you know, with loads of incredible, brilliant people in it, is very different in many ways from the shorts that we did, but is still recognisably got the DNA of the original shorts in it, right? And that's because of a process of years of development, which is much more focused on the needs of a repeatable global TV show than stupid shorts that we're making for ourselves, which we can talk about a bit more later. But we should talk about the shorts, shouldn't we? Because we haven't mentioned them yet.
We have not at all, no.
Yeah. No. So that was what we did, wasn't it? Was we did a test first, short.
This is when I was working on another job and you two got together to start these. And I joined you a bit later on, but this bit I don't really know because I wasn't there. So please enlighten me.
What was it like from your view, Alex?
I mean, it was funny because my recollection is we did a test and we liked that and put it out there and it did well and then did another one. I think they're both called pilot because they were both pilots in their way. But it was
I've changed the name of the first one to initial test animation, I think, to mean that it isn't called pilot anymore because the next one was called the pilot.
Yeah. So, but that's fine. Everything should have at least 3 pilots.
Dinosaurs pilot. 0007
final.
.mp4.
Exactly.
That's another.
I'm kind of happy that it's out there as just like that's a test. We're not giving this finished product. It's like, well, I don't know. We don't know what we're doing. Slightly kind of feel of it. And it was me testing myself as well because I didn't want it to be entirely CG because that's just lots of rendering time if you're doing the set as well. So I rendered the characters on plates and then manipulated them in 2D.
What does that mean, Alex?
In After Effects, I layered things up and moved the camera around, sometimes a little bit too much. but it just meant everything was a lot quicker. Render out the characters individually or, you know, together if they were sort of interacting. And then you could just have a 2D painted world. And I kind of wanted that scratchiness. It had to be sort of fun and colorful, but I wanted to keep that drawn on a napkin, because you literally did draw some of those dinosaurs.
It literally was
on
drawn on a napkin, yeah. And also, I should say, like, although it makes it sound, and it was a very, very clever way of making something achievable production-wise, as well as keeping that scratchy feel, to watch it, you would never know if you didn't understand this stuff. Like, you would never know that it wasn't kind of done in a hugely expensive studio way. And, you know, like, people were looking at it going, oh my God, that's like Pixar stuff. And actually, yeah, it isn't, but it's, you know,
it's very much impression. Not.
Yeah,
but it was, know, like that it was from our point of view, just the most beautiful thing we'd ever done or been involved in. Right?
By miles, like by miles. Yeah.
Amazing step up from the kind of crappy animations that I've been doing for Rather Good and John had done.
Yeah, it was so much better than
astonishing.
Our work. Yeah. And then to the icing on the cake was we shoved it on YouTube and Rather Good, and the world loved it, right? Which was the real kind of kicker to the whole thing. They're like, oh yeah, we should run with this, because you can make something that you love, and as we've just discussed, it can sink. And you don't always know why, but some things just don't land. But this one really landed, right? So yeah. So we came back to it and thought, well, let's try and make a slightly better constructed story. And by better constructed story, I mean, it has got a story.
A story, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So we sat and jotted down things and ideas, didn't we? And nattered. And we came up with this, and I'm going to use the word proper, although the other one was still proper, but like a little short, a 2-minute short, didn't we? Rather than just a test.
It was. I think it ran to 4.5 in the end. The
Sorry,
slapstick.
I'm lying. It wasn't 2 minutes. Okay. So it was 4.5 then. Yeah. I haven't been back to this stuff for ages. You can tell, can't you? Because I don't know how long it was anymore.
Well, no, you've had three and a bit hours to do it. Suddenly going back to kind of minutes. It's wild.
But yeah, so we made this, which was a big step up, wasn't it, in terms of the kind of the attempt to world build around it. And we did it as a mockumentary. Both of these shorts were mockumentary format.
The idea was, it was like a David Attenborough animal documentary, but with dinosaurs. And the central joke to it was that the host, the narrator, is absolutely in awe of these beautiful, wonderful, majestic beasts of the prehistoric age. But what we're seeing is they're idiots, right?
Yeah.
You know, that was the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
The one joke.
But there's loads of slapstick jokes. That's the central joke.
Yes,
So that was a beautifully realised piece of work. And again, certainly Dave and I were in awe of your work, Alex. We just thought it was incredible. And
thank you.
It's important, yeah, I think, to emphasise how much of this is on you, because, like,
oh gosh, absolutely.
You were like the real driving force in making this the thing that it was. And it was amazing. It was amazing. We were absolutely blown away.
It was a lot of fun, and it was three months to do 4.5 minutes.
Wow.
Of animation. Yeah. That's the 3D characters, the backgrounds being painted, and then the comping it all together.
Well, you had to design the characters and then build them and rig them and everything, right? Like,
and job that would take...
Design is a strong word. They really did leap off. You know, whenever there was, you know, any of us did a little drawing, and predominantly you guys, and it does just leap off the page. And there was actually a real joy in trying to mess with it as little as possible. We've all seen those lovely kind of, we've made some children's drawings real. Ideas, yeah. I think Mad Magazine did back in the day. And that appeal of
that was totally your job to take
stupid doodles and make them real.
Incomprehensible children's drawings and make them real, yes.
I love that in the industry, in the animation industry, there are lots of people doing little back of the napkins, sort of back of the envelope sketches. And then someone turns them into a multi-million, amazing thing. But the idea of actually going, no, literally, that's what you've asked for. That's what you've got.
Yeah, you know, right?
That's exactly right, though, isn't it? Yeah.
I'd love it if a Marvel film looked like that, of kind of children's drawings. And it was kind of like Thanos, instead of like that, his molded face, it's just a couple of lines on his chin. Well, that's what you want. That's what you drew. There you go. Yeah.
But like, I suspect that a lot of people out in the world don't really think about how much work goes into these things. And it's an enormous amount of work. Like you were saying, that it's months to do a few minutes. But this is a job that in any sane world would have been done by a large team of people, not by one mad genius sitting in a room.
A team would have been, and that is the joy of television, is that that's suddenly you don't have to go mad in a room on your own, which I know we've all at some point gone mad in a room.
Kind of the job description, isn't it?
So
I mean, it's an incredible achievement, and I mean, I certainly have never met anyone who can do what you can do. It's amazing and humbling. So thank you and we worship at your shrine. And
thank you for like bringing me into this mad, because we had tried before. I remember there was a music video you tried to get me in on with a many-legged, you're gonna have to remind me.
Oh, maybe. The screaming flailing machine.
I did get really bogged down in how to achieve all of this with computer graphics. I think that's why later years I did get lazier and more inventive.
Right.
Because I think I would have tried to simulate it all correctly. And that's when I went, I can't do this. And so we didn't, that never happened. And it was one of those ones that fell by the wayside.
That's interesting, because I did do the video for that.
Yeah.
Oh! I had no idea that John had previously gone to you. I didn't know I was the second choice. Oh, that's good.
This is
mine was like 2D cutout photos, like very, very crap.
No, but this is the joy of it. I saw that and went, oh, that's how you do it. That's how you don't go insane trying to make every single thing 3D and fully articulated. And it was a joy.
You would have had to have made a fully CG Joel screaming face.
Exactly. And I thought I could do that. And I was in every sense wrong.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
But this is the thing. It's kind of finding the right level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I obviously, you know, I have no, and this is still very much true, however much you learn, there's always intricacies of somebody's job that you'll never really grasp. I never know for sure what I'm asking. You know, like whether my request is reasonable or unreasonable, unless you actually have been involved in doing that thing yourself. When you pass a request down the chain, it's very difficult to know. And you get it, you know, I've had it the other way, you know, far more times than I could count. It happens all the time. People go, oh, just one little thing. And then they ask you for something utterly nightmarish.
John and I, we've done a bunch of ads and corporate stuff and client work where you animate the whole thing and then you get a note saying, it's great, but could the main character just have this different thing about him?
Yeah, like, can you give him yellow trousers instead?
That means redoing the entire thing from
those
scratch.
Those three words.
Can you just?
Yeah. No!
I mean, every now and again, it's something which is actually
there was a time for this
easy.
Note, and it was 4 weeks ago.
Yeah. And you try and build in rounds of feedback into the schedule and try and enforce them, but nobody ever wants to...
Oh, it never works.
Never wants to abide by that, yeah.
Like, you build in the feedback round, and then the client takes 2 weeks or 3 weeks to get back with the feedback. And they're supposed to have like 2 days for this. And they delay for ages. And the whole project has like a 4 or 5 week like schedule.
Yeah, it is like a quarter of the schedule waiting for the feedback. Yeah.
And they finally get back and say, sorry for the delay. We got a bit busy and we had some internal conversations and everything. And sorry, we're 2 weeks late with this, but we're still okay for the deadline, right? It's like, no we're not. You've absolutely screwed it.
Yeah.
Except there's huge pressure on you not to say that.
Except,
so you almost always go, oh, are we you can try. And then everybody has to work till midnight for a week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's horrible, horrible, horrible. Yeah. Oh, well, so that's the joy of corporate life.
My favourite one of those, I've told you guys this before because I loved working on it. And despite the project taking a massive left turn at the end, it was a business that provided a certain type of business framework to follow projects. So it was this very kind of ordered flowcharty thing. And they wanted to make it a bit more fun. And they chose a scene from a famous film franchise that they felt best exemplified the talking to your team, making decisions. And it was Darth Vader round the table with his kind of with the generals. And they thought that was the best way to create this. So it created a space despot and his kind of sycophantic series of generals. And they outlined how the project would go, this big space gun to blow up planet. Mm-hmm. And right near the end of the project, I stupidly asked the question, "You know you're the bad guys in this, don't you?" and they went, "What?" They went, "You know, have you seen Star Wars?" And they went, "Oh my goodness, we've got to change everything." And somehow I didn't go insane, and we managed to make it comical and change the tone while not the content. But I really, ask it those questions that sit nagging in your head and you think, "Oh God, I probably should have asked that a bit sooner."
Yeah.
Advertising companies are a special place, aren't they?
Having said that, we are available for advertising commissions.
Absolutely, yes.
We will ask the tough questions a little bit earlier.
I've done lots of less cynical. Yeah, we've done lots of ad work, right? And it's just different. It's a different way of working. You've got to work the way that the industry works.
I mean, The key learning I've got, which might have helped you in that situation, Alex, is just never point out how absurd it is. Just do it.
Yeah, that's
just do what you're told. Cash your check.
Moments of realization. Don't There was a really good aspirational one lesson for when I directed a video game advert, and they were like, "Well, let's cast it," and I thought, "Well, these are the people who will be playing the game." So these sort of, you know, sort of 30 something kind of gamers. So those were the faces I sent in, and they sent theirs back who were all gorgeous and 20. And I went, "Yes, I've made a terrible mistake here. I've mixed the reality and the aspiration, and I see what's happening now." And yeah, no one wants to be sold the reality. That's not what we're here for. Sell the fantasy. So suddenly, on set on a massive green screen set with gorgeous 20-somethings and who are never going to play that game.
No.
Yeah.
Hey, I was just thinking I should talk about what happened when we made that short, shouldn't I? Because So we made that short, which we're really pleased with, and shoved it on the internet and it did gangbusters again. But this is this is the point where I thought we had a good enough show to try and hawk it around, right? And so I took that around the film festival circuit and I took it to some production companies. And we got it optioned, didn't we? And it went through a couple of different options and it didn't come off. People who I'd really, really like and whose opinions I really respect were suggesting things like changing all of the character designs really fundamentally. And but I don't think we should do that, you know?
We went to lots of places,
And none of it really came off. And this went on for years. Meanwhile, I was taking it around the film festival circuit and I was really happy to see that it was doing well online. It was stacking up millions of views online. And it was also really popular when I was sitting in cinemas, you know, at festivals and kind of, this is what you do when you're at a festival and your film is playing, isn't it? Is you're not really watching the film, you're watching the audience and see if they laugh in all the right places. And they did. And we had some fun trips away, but it took years of false starts, didn't it? Literally years, despite all of that and racking up tens of millions of views online and multiple options with different companies and false starts here and false starts there. It just took forever, and we were very close to giving up, actually.
Yeah.
I think it was 6 years, wasn't it, before we actually got into funded development at Netflix. And
there was certainly, I mean, I remember that it got very close. You guys.
Oh, it got very close several times. Yeah.
Okay. It was because I remember when YouTube changed its rules about
Oh, gosh. Yeah. We nearly signed it up for an online one.
We very, very nearly sold it to a kid's YouTube channel. Yeah.
Oh, that would have been a terrible mistake. But we were just desperate
for away from signing.
Yeah.
At this point, right? Like, at that point, we had been flogging it for years and years.
6 years.
Right?
6 years, yeah.
And there's only so much time you can do that before going, well, got to make something off this. We've got to make some money out of
this. So much work and effort had gone into it. And you sink all of that effort and work and time. It has a financial cost as well, right? And you need to make something back. And
Is that around the time you're about to say, right?
We almost started the YouTube channel, and then YouTube changed its rules about kids' content.
Absolutely,
that was
exactly the time when YouTube
decided to disable comments on kid shows and disable targeted advertising, which is a decision I think was a really good one.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do. Yeah, we all support that.
Yeah, but as a company, we were trying to sell a kid show to a YouTube channel at that exact moment. That was.
But this, this is like literally on the day of the meeting was when it was announced.
It was.
And it slashed the value of all kids' content on YouTube and kind of killed the business structure idea behind the deal that we were about to sign. You know, and thank God we didn't. It turns out it was a lucky escape.
Well, but, at the time, it seemed like a disaster. But in hindsight, I'm so glad that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So we did eventually team up with Snafu, who's a new company. We got it into funded development. And then from there, which is its own traumatic experience, funded development is not, it's all going to go swimmingly and get into production. It's another couple of years of slog, but at least you're getting somewhere.
It's slog with a destination in sight.
Yeah, yeah. And it did eventually end up on telly and wonderful, as I'm sure everyone listening will agree when they finish this podcast and watch the whole thing from beginning to end and give it a
brilliant review.
In fact,
don't finish the podcast. You pause the podcast, watch 3 hours of cartoons and come back.
Yeah, yeah. But it has changed, right? It has this kind of, to come back to what we're talking about and, you know, things that you make for you, like the thing that we, that kicked this whole project off was stuff that we were making for us. And then the needs of something which has to be repeatable over many, many episodes and hours of content and also serve specifically defined kids' audiences around the world, all of this stuff kind of leads you to make choices over a long, long period. You kind of hone it and hone it and hone it. And so the show that we've ended up making is noticeably different from the shorts we made in several key ways. And the big one about that, the big one of those differences being that we gradually fell out of love with the mockumentary format because it became harder and harder to use that format in a way that we were enjoying over the long term, right?
I think it was like I said earlier, that was the one joke, right? The central joke. And that's fine for some shorts. But you can't maintain that joke over 24 episodes.
Yeah, and it started to feel like, you know, the narrator's watching a different show from us, you know? Mm. Like, is the joke that we see something and the narrator tells us something else is happening, you know, because that's not sustainable, you know? If the narrator is watching the same thing we're watching, why is he still filled with awe? I don't know, like, it just became increasingly difficult. And then also, if you're trying to tell stories, it's a slightly difficult to avoid using the narrator as a crutch for exposition, which is very lazy. And if you're not using the narrator as a crutch for exposition, then why isn't he telling you what's going on?
There was a moment, you know, in the early stages where the conversations we were talking about, things like, well, what are the rules of the narrator? Back when we still had a narrator. Yeah. Well, we shouldn't have to rely on him, right? You should be able to understand the story without the narrator.
Yeah,
it shouldn't ever be just pushing the story and explaining things.
Yeah,
and then you follow that on. It's like, well, then what's the point of him? You know, why is he there if he's not doing anything? He's not contributing to the story. Yeah, so eventually, you know.
Yeah. And the other big change was we ended up, instead of just having this big ensemble cast of idiots with the narrator leading us through it, we ended up focusing on a family, the Tyrannosaurus family, as the center of the world, and telling the story through their eyes, which was another big change, and one I'm very, very happy with. It's worked brilliantly, but it took us a long time to get to that point, right? Took us a couple of years, really, of development to get to that point. I don't think we need to kind of forensically pick apart every little painful bit of the development process. Painful and joyful, right? Because it's both of those things in combination, isn't it? As with anything like this.
It's certainly a process that's made me like a lot less precious about ideas. It's something I've taken into other projects where it comes back to that, who is it for? And, you know, is that particular joke, is that a visual in service of the story? And if it's not, it's a lot easier to kill your darlings when you're sort of thinking that way. It's not cynical. Yeah. I don't think you have to be cynical about it, because it's still about the story. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And I think that way, that's why visually a lot of some of the, you know, more extremely ridiculous dinosaurs had to be kind of reined in a little. I mean, there's a technical aspect of it, is can you really animate something that relies so heavily on a massive physics simulation for a long noodly neck?
Yes.
You know, episode after episode. And I was creating
visual language.
Yeah. Yeah.
Assuming we get a second series, I fully intend to champion bringing back the noodle neck Diplodocus. But this is a this is a battle for another day. I've got a plan for him. I've got a pitch for him.
I am heartened to hear it.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like one of the ones that I know everybody thought was a favorite design was the Stegosaurus, which in the shorts you can see his face is absolutely on the side of his body. And we spent a lot of time trying to work out how you could actually do, because the thing is, on our shorts, you've got a camera which isn't as dynamic as it is in the show for obvious reasons to do with cost and production. And
I mean, Alex, you're the one that rigged and animated that Stegosaurus, right?
Yes.
How did you deal with that?
I mean, he was genuinely designed only to be seen from that angle. So, because the entire way the shorts that we made were mounted was 2D. You could totally get away with that. And on a show with a full 3D camera and full 3D environments, you simply can't. And certainly not the kind of show we're making. If it was a sort of, I feel like there's a different show out there where your comic little kind of surreal characters can live, but you can't tell the sorts of stories that we wanted to tell if you've got these limitations.
And that
was a fairly simple kind of case of you have to change it.
Yeah, we did play with a couple of solutions, like having the face move across the character. And we dug out, I can't remember what it was now, probably shouldn't name it, even if we did, because I'm going to be negative about it. But there is a show out there that we dug out where they do that, moving the face across the character. And I personally didn't like the effect. You know, and I think that there were other people who similarly kind of felt like it wasn't something that we would want to emulate. Just seeing it
came
done
up quite
real.
Early, didn't it? That was a sticking point. Something like that. The language of that, the kind of the mechanics of this is taking things to a surreal degree that doesn't sit with the rest of the show. And that's another. If you're going to take people out of the show. And if that's a face is going to slide around, the rules of the world are up in smoke at that point.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the difference between, the difference between like some silly sketches and some like quick shorts and a whole show. Like the visual language, the shape language has to be consistent in a show, right? You can get away with, in a short, you can get away with this character is just very silly, right? This is the one when you've got a locked off camera and, you know, he only looks right from this angle. You can get away with it, but in a 24 episode show where the camera's doing whatever it needs to do for that episode, whatever the director wants it to do, you can't be constrained by that. You can't make the whole show constrained to the visual language of one character who's nothing like anyone else. You've got to make concessions at that point.
Yeah, especially because he's not one of the main characters. I mean, he's one of the most joyful characters, but he's not one of the main characters.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot more we could say about what we landed on in terms of storytelling and how we landed there, but that's probably for another day, isn't it? Because that's a whole subject in itself.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably about time to do what we normally do, which is thumbs up or thumbs down. So,
does the thing we're talking about today become banned on pain of death? Once we've seized power. Obviously, all of this is preparation for the day we seize power.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Alex. I'm not sure if we fully explained that the conceit of the show is that we are going to stage a violent coup.
The conceit of the show is a very kind of conditional way of putting it. Like, we are planning the revolution.
Yes.
I always assume we're planning the revolution. So,
So in our new world order,
where we're in charge,
will the thing we're currently talking about be mandatory or banned?
Yeah. Mm. Everything that is not mandatory is forbidden.
So okay. I'll ask both of you, the show that we've all spent a decade desperately trying to get on the air, which is going out on TV today, is that thumbs up or thumbs down?
It's thumbs up from me.
It will not shock you to discover that my thumb is firmly aloft.
Oh, thank God for that.
Yeah.
Oh, right, I'd be gutted if we ended up having to ban it.
Yeah. And it's a thumbs down from me.
No, Dave, no.
Wait, no, hang on. No, I mean, thumbs up. I got confused.
Yeah.
Phew. So, I mean, I was opening up Photoshop as we speak to paint you out of history.
Yeah. Like a faulty Bolshevik. You'll be.
Stalin was all about the Photoshop, wasn't he?
He was. Yeah, he was like the original Photoshopper.
I did like that one where he made everyone else much fatter than him. That's a great. If you've not seen that, look it up.
Oh, yeah, I'm
completely lying. But now I want to go and do fat Trotsky and fat Lenin.
The thing is, that sounds
exactly the kind of thing that he would have done.
Like a feasible thing. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's probably harder to do with an airbrush than they're just painting someone out, right? And they didn't have Photoshop in those days. Yeah.
No, they still used PaintShop Pro, didn't they?
Yeah. I wonder if Kim Jong-un ever attempted. No, I mean, being fat is part of his whole thing, isn't it, Kim Jong-un?
But, I thought he had a rippling six pack.
Buried under there, all the other stuff. So I think this is more though, because we've got an extra vote. So it's more mandatory than just mandatory.
As discussed earlier,
it's all other culture will be banned, right? And
The
dinosaurs will be all that remains.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm glad we've come to a conclusion there. I guess we don't need to talk about what we're going to talk about next week, because this has been a special episode that exists in its very
outside
own reality, outside of the normal time frame. Yeah. So I guess
it's been fun hanging with you in this pocket dimension.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great, isn't it?
I'm sad to say this pocket dimension is due to collapse very soon, and we will be crushed into a singularity.
Unless you enter your pod now, so that we can continue. We can continue.
Enter your
the
pod now.
enter dimension pod. Okay.
Ooh, who's in this pod before me?
Brilliant. Okay, guys, lovely to chat, and hopefully see you very soon again.
So good to chat.
Oh, absolutely.
Hooray!
Whee!
Bye!